do just, they absorb a lot. Well, unless you get like a bad, not a bad athlete, but like a stubborn one. An unmotivated. A good way to look at it. And I mean, you think about this too, oftentimes is these unmotivated athletes, they can very easily slip into that realm of like Joe Schmo. You know, you may have previous athlete experience, but in a structured sport, but training like an athlete is different.
It
Like
is completely different.
it's completely different. Like being playing basketball and being on the basketball team is different than, especially depending on what time you played sport, right? Like I look at the climate of sport optimization and sport performance training now, and it is a world different just
It
5 years ago.
is. And kids are starting younger, and they're pushed harder at younger ages, and
Yes. And
they're
there's
taking a
always
lot more
been,
seriously.
exactly, they're taking a lot more seriously now. And it's become much like, you know, American football has just been like this cash cow in America. I look at sport optimization training as attributing to that
Oh,
youth,
definitely.
yeah, that youth predominance now.
We're seeing little tiny kids do amazing things that we were really astounded by when professional athletes did them 20 years ago.
Exactly, and that has just been taken up tenfold, you know, and the more we continue to uncover the sciences behind, you know, the why for our training and how there's different muscle fibers that serve different functions. You know, I go into a lot of this stuff too in other episodes, so people can certainly check that out in previous episodes. In I think episode 8 with Mr. James Ramsey talking about kind of that sport physiology and sport optimization side of things. It's really crazy to think about how deep all of those training practices really go with athletes. And I don't think people in general, athletes as well, give enough credit to trainers and coaches that put together their workouts.
I don't think they realize all the thought that goes into each exercise and pairing it with the next exercise and trying to make it cohesive to make sure that you're addressing every single need that they have, especially in like sports optimization. You have to be super aware of what you're doing, super aware of anatomy. You have to know and muscle connections and attachments and all of these things to know how to use those muscles properly and in safe ways. And I don't think that they realize that at all, that we stay up late at night thinking about these things.
No, and that's just my point, right? Is like there's always a rhyme or reason to why you or I apply anything to our training practices.
Definitely.
And especially when you consider athletes, you know, they're not only training at a higher intensity in most cases, but there's got to be a reason to what you're doing. There's got to be a carryover to the sport. Otherwise, it's just empty, you know, it's just kind of empty effort to me.
It really is.
Like, you don't take a running back and have them run miles. Like, a running back is supposed to be a short burst of energy with utmost power and speed. Not running miles a day. Like, I think about my experience as an athlete, football and wrestling respectively, and that for whatever reason, their form of conditioning us was just beating us to the ground with bear crawls and just running.
At that point in time, well, especially in my day, it was kind of all they knew, I feel like, as conditioning. I mean, yeah, they could have thrown in some jump roping or something like that, but for the most part, they just had you run or had you do like calisthenic drills. And I think at the time, that was all that they knew. I mean,
Yeah, and I mean, to me though, I think ultimately you don't know what you don't know, you know, and that's like we just said, depending on how far back that goes, really, this idea of like sports performance outside of professional sports is really kind of this new thing within the last 10 years. I mean,
Yeah, it's true.
and I think it's come a long way. But when people are, and of course there's performance enhancing drugs as well in sports, but for the most part, you have athletes just pushing that bar.
Yes, and we
And
understand more now.
right. We understand more about the physiology of the body to be able to optimize it for performance related tasks. But talking about the general population, going back to that point, what the difference is there most times is like you find that Gen Pop, especially Planet Fitness, this is why I have a problem with them. It's mostly like component-based training. It's isolation.
Yes, and most of it's like machine based.
Right.
So there is, it's completely stable, and you're not having to work a lot of the smaller muscles surrounding the large muscle, you know. And so you're missing a lot of things, and people will be like, oh, I don't understand why this hurts or that hurts, because you are working everything around it and not that, and it's just getting tighter and weaker all the time.
Yeah, and I've always
Always
believed
believed
too,
to
like,
like
whenever you
whenever you
train in abundance with a fixed motion or range of motion or pattern, you're not building the musculature that supports balance and supports a lot of these, the proprioception.
Yeah,
You know,
the
like,
things you'll need in life. It's not a functional way of training.
exactly. So, like, people that are telling me that they bench or squat such and such number on a Jones machine, I kind of chuckle because you're really just measuring how much you can push in a linear direction rather than how you can handle a barbell with stability. Like, if you think about the type of mechanics that are involved in barbell execution training, especially when you get into some of those dynamic movement patterns via Olympic weightlifting and such, it really becomes just inhuman. The kind of movements that are involved with the weight that some people are putting on, like
Really superhuman.
it really, or yeah, superhuman would probably be the better terminology. And
Yeah. And you see people with like 500 pounds on their back and things like that.
right.
And it's amazing to think that they can keep that balance. You know, you have just the right positioning and all of that. And just from the little bit that I have done, I can see and feel such a difference in
Yeah.
that style of training.
And that leads me back to another difference about the general population crowd that they aren't considering. And this is ultimately to, I want to showcase these things and I want us to talk about these things because I think people get confused about what they expect out of their training. They put themselves in this category, like we're describing Gen Pop and athlete. That is simply just trying to I guess differentiate the entities and the characteristics to be able to show you how they can create a crossover so you can find your balance between athlete and just general training. Right? Like my whole point for this talk with you, Mallory, is for us to talk about mostly these habits that general population are exhibiting and then the athlete habits that they're exhibiting and come somewhere in the middle to be able to help people develop a more sound approach to their training. Because the way I look at it, for the most part, general population is coming in blind a lot of the time.
They really are.
Wasted efforts too. You know,
Yeah.
Pizza Fridays at Planet Fitness aren't going to get you to where you want to be, Becky. So I mean, you can tell there's some definite passion in this conversation. I find myself really getting like excited about maybe that or the 450 megs of caffeine. It's one of those two.
It's probably combination of the two.
Probably a con. You're pretty calm over there.
I'm always calm. Yes.
She exhibits
Exhibits
more
more
of
of
the
the
Zen
Zen
approach
approach
to
to
holistic
holistic
fitness
fitness
practices,
practices.
and that kind of
That
leads
leads
me
me
into
into
my
my
next
next
point
point
too,
too,
is
is
this
this
aspect
aspect
of
of
holistic
holistic
training.
training. Yes, and I think a lot of what I see in the general population that is not talked about that much is how kind of body obsessed we are.
Oh my goodness, yes.
How everybody has a bit of dysmorphia. We all look in the mirror and see a much worse image than what is really reflected back to us.
Agreed.
I don't think I really started to get into the best shape of my life and love my body until I started to let go of unrealistic body image. I'm happy with the way I look now, and I feel like I'm in the best shape of my life because I don't compare myself to anybody else. I know a lot of my clients come in and say things like, I don't look like this person, or I'm never going to be in as good a shape as you, or something like that. Something crazy like that. And I just try to help them realize that they're doing a really good job where they are, and that they have to cut themselves some slack. That's the most important thing. Cut yourself some slack. Take your fitness and your eating really seriously.
Exactly.
Stop thinking about what you look like for a second. Let your body get stronger. And then you can start to enjoy the differences that you're seeing in your body afterwards, as long as you take your focus off of that.
So, I mean, my experience with it as well, because we all start at this Gen Pop kind of, you know, way of going about things where we're all kind of clueless. But somewhere along the line, well, I mean, I can't sit here and say that I wasn't obsessed about the look and things either. And I think it's just a matter about, you know, rather than people learning the hard way through food disorders and kind of this whole body dysmorphia thing, like, this is what we want to save you from. Talking about these experiences is like finding that middle ground between athlete and Gen Pop. And I don't say Gen Pop is like a demeaning term. I just say Gen Pop, meaning the majority. Let's just say the majority. So this difference between the athletes and the majority, like finding that middle ground to where you can still be athletic and not worry about being 7 or 8 fucking percent body fat. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yes. You can be athletic and healthy and have higher body fat percentage. I mean, you don't have to look like you're about to walk on stage for a bodybuilding competition all the time. That most of those people at that point in time in their training don't feel that great. And I personally feel like fitness and health should be about how you feel more than anything else. So I think first work on building the strength and just work on encouraging good habits. I think that's one of the things with general population, the majority, as we're now saying, is that they just need to establish some really good habits and to start to think differently. It's about changing that kind of thinking, like, okay, I ate some potato chips, now the whole rest of the day is shot. I have to get back on track tomorrow. No. Okay, don't have more potato chips after that. Eat healthy for the rest of the day. Your whole day is not shot just because you had a handful of potato chips. That's life.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, is like, people, again, going back to that point, like, they feel like they have to choose a side, right? Yes. Like, it's not Democrat and Republican, folks. It's like,
you have so many choices.
Yeah, I know. You can, you know, you can be athletic and still, I don't know.
Yeah, you don't think an athlete's ever had a potato chip? Or you don't think somebody who's in shape eats not so great things on occasion? Because we all do.
Yeah.
All of our guilty pleasures and things.
And I, again, going back to the point, like, I feel like everybody can be athletic.
Yes.
Everybody can be an athlete. And it's like, people look at this term athlete or the people that are doing the sports applying to the, you know, applying to that particular athlete, they look at that and they're like, wow, I could never do that. And it's like, no, you can be athletic. That's what it, these people that are, excuse me, these people that are getting really good at sports, these athletes that are, you know, the Messies of the world or the Michael Jordans or the LeBron James, people think of it as an anomaly. And what I'm telling you simply is that it is individuals who have taken upon themselves to have the internal drive and intrinsic motivation to hold themselves accountable to a structured training routine, no matter what time of day it is, no matter what. I mean, they are at it like a full-time job. So you think about these capabilities of these super phenomenal athletes, and it really comes down to the behaviors. And that's what I want to point out in this whole endeavor is that, you know, the principle of behavior.
Yeah, definitely.
Right?
I train a lady who would be in the majority, and she comes to the gym pretty much every day. She puts in effort. She wears a huge pack and hikes up the stairmill. She does all of these things while raising a family, working as a teacher as well. And she commits to all of those things in such a way that I think that makes her an athlete as well as being part of the majority.
Exactly. And to me, that's what it's about, right? Like just discipline. Mm-hmm. Discipline.
Yes.
We're all tired. Let me just point that out first and foremost. I've said this before and I'll say it again. Life is suffering, folks. Life is suffering in perpetuity. And it's how you choose to perceive this suffering that's going to allow you to ease it with a bit of success throughout your life. So let me make this clear. When you're tired and you make an excuse for why you can't do something about your health or why you can't exercise or whatever, you know, if you're 400 pounds, like there's a problem with that. There is a behavioral problem with that.
That's true.
And whether it's psychological, because we're finding that that's linked, right? A lot of the time with these behavioral attributes, what it's separating you from this athletic characteristic is simply the behavior. It's exercising your discipline in perpetuity.
It's a shift in psychology.
Agreed. And going off of this aspect of behavior change, I kind of want, because I have the resource for this, I want to list some models that I think would be helpful for our audience and just people in general. So I'm going to go ahead and shoot. So these are some behavioral change theories, and I'm going to list one by one and talk about each of them briefly. Cool?
Mm-hmm.
And then we can kind of, you know, congregate and talk it out.
Yeah.
Awesome. So the first one is the classic learning theory. And the premise of this one is it's a new behavior develops from a series of small changes and extrinsic rewards, and it is maintained through environmental cues and intrinsic rewards. So I'll say that again. A new behavior develops from a series of small changes and extrinsic rewards. It is maintained through environmental cues and intrinsic rewards. So let's talk about that for a minute. So the premise of this classic learning theory, from what I'm understanding, Mallory, is that this aspect of being able to change a behavior really lies in the long term, the macro of it, right? It really lies in this premise of taking small steps. Small victories are going to facilitate the overall intrinsic motivation or that victory, right? To continue that maintenance. And what it says through, it's maintained through environmental cues, which environmental meaning, think about social media platforms, posting your successes on social media. They got like buttons, they've got emoji buttons, right? All in which release this kind of dopamine in our brain that allows us to feed off of that feel-good chemical. So I can see this is a good theory, right? And I want to list these theories, and I want ultimately people to think about what applies to them. I want you to use what you can here, folks. This is not forcing anything on you. This is simply opening your eyes into what your options are, how you can best learn.
I mean, I guess going back to what you were saying about the whole social media thing, I think that only really represents such a small amount. But I do think small changes over time do kind of create lasting effects. I mean, you don't want to lose a whole bunch of weight in a week or in a short period. You want to lose just a little bit at a time so that you can maintain that throughout time. And to make too big of changes. I think rewarding yourself with little things along the way is that kind of extrinsic that and intrinsically just being able to look at yourself and see you're strong, see more value in the things that you do because you were able to perform those things more easily. I think those are kind of the intrinsic rewards that we get along the way.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that's why I really like this model, because I feel like this one, like social media was just, I mean, that was just my example. That was my
Yes. No,
analogous
I
example.
think it's a really good example, especially for our younger listeners and population, because those are the things that matter to them.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, it's just one of the many different, like, it's one of the many behavior change theories, and there's a ton here. So, again, it's about finding what fits for you, and there's no one size fits all approach. And that's what I ultimately, again, this whole podcast is predicated on, is like breaking through the bullshit of the fitness industry, because it's sickening, right? So I could get off on a whole nother tangent there. Let's go ahead
No,
and continue with
let's
number
stay with
two.
that. Yeah, theories, yes.
So we have the health belief model. This one's the biggest one, I mean, in my experience. One of the biggest. We'll go with that. It's one of the
One of the
biggest
biggest
ones,
ones,
and
and
this
this
one
one
relates
relates
back
back
to health-related behavior depending on individual perception of risks
risks
and
and
benefits.
benefits.
So the confidence that they can continue a behavior, that kind of self-efficacy aspect, is going to predict their adherence. So this health-related behavior depending on the individual perception of these risks and benefits, so that establishes some sort of confidence in what they're enduring, right? So like I look at this and I extrapolate this whole health belief model as their perceived capabilities of controlling their environmental cues towards good or bad options.
Yeah, and I'd say this theory, I'd call this one 50 theory because you've got 50% of that majority population who's going to be like, forget it. And I don't care. I'm going to be rebellious and do what I want. And then you have the other half who are going to see value in them and try to kind of apply that to their life and use this theory in a positive way versus just rebelling against it. But I think half of my clients fall under that rebellious category of I'm just here 'cause I don't know. I have no real goal in mind. I'm just doing it to do it. And then the other half would see the kind of risk benefit thing where they are risking their health if they don't, and they are getting benefits from it and being able to.
Agreed. And I think that that's the whole thing, like, about the health belief model. And from what I remember in some of my undergrad courses about this theory, was that you really want to highlight the perceived benefits of the said endeavor, right? So like the perceived benefit of vegetable uptake for Dan, who's pre-diabetic or diabetic, right? So like you want to definitely change the perceptions of those benefits and change the perceptions of the risks, being where they're hyper aware of the risks and hyper aware of the benefits, right? So now they can make an informed decision. And it simply comes down to, like, okay, there's one thing, if people generally just said to us, like, look, we know we're fucking up and eating like shit, I don't want to change it, none of us would have jobs. But what it comes down to is the reality is people don't know how to eat, people don't know how to train, and there's food deserts by design.
So true.
And we'll go into some of that stuff, because I know that's something you're super passionate
That's a whole
about.
another podcast, so
And it is a
for
whole
another
nother podcast, ladies and gentlemen. But
day.
yeah, I mean, the reality is, though, is it's like, ultimately, this only is serving a certain group of people. That's why there's so many different models, right? And we'll go on to the next one. I like this one because it hones in on the aspect of, like, this is what you're going to... It makes it black and white, kind of, to me.
It's a very clinical approach.
Yes, yes, exactly. I would... Very much so. Well said. So we'll go on to the next one. The next one is that, and I would say this one is probably the most popular because I think this one can be exercised at least most often. I think people are accepting of it better. The trans-theoretical model, and this one is commonly referred to as the stages of change model. And the premise here is that people change when they feel that they're ready and that the readiness follows with these non-linear series of changes in stages, where adherence is the highest in action and maintenance stages. So those are kind of like the later steps. Mm-hmm. So the stages of change being that, you know, that pre-contemplation, like getting that. So this whole stage theory is pretty much the breakdown of all the stages is your pre-contemplation stage, where
thinking about doing.
There, well, that's the contemplation. They have that thought that they want. They fit. They're teetering, right? That's the contemplation. Pre-contemplation is it's in their head. The seed is planted, right? So, like, the information's there. They haven't quite let the gear shift yet. So it's this pre-contemplative.
That might give me something to do with my life.
Right. So, right, without even realizing that it's kind of setting the stage for you. Kind of like Dragon Ball Z was for me and all of my listeners out there. I want you guys to know. I want you to know. I am the biggest Dragon Ball Z fan, and I will say that with confidence and conviction. So never challenge me. Anyway, so going back... Wow. Going back to the point here.
One more.
Yes. Right. So yeah, that pre-contemplation, like, for me it was Dragon Ball Z. Like, I had been watching it, and you know, it was something I obsessed over as a kid, but it really set the planted the seed for me, rather, for this transition of what would eventually be my behavior change, because I wanted to be a Saiyan and be disciplined and be, you know, a strong, healthy fighter.
Yeah, you wanted to strive to be the very best.
Yeah.
Just like.
You gotta get this.
Goku.
Exactly. Ooh, she would have been in trouble for that one, folks. That would have been the end of the show today. So that's that pre-contemplation stage. You kind of have that idea in your head of kind of what the whole point is of, you know, before you even consider your training practices. So then we have this contemplation stage, and this is where you can kind of look at it as like, well, it could go either way. Like, I think I might want to. This is kind of where people get in their New Year's resolutions, I would say, is probably the most common part of it, is like this this contemplation stage, where it's like before New Year's hits, they have to figure out something they're going to do.
I'm going to sign up for Planet Fitness.
Or... But it's usually, it starts with, I think I might.
Yeah, it's that kind of, you have that kind of feeling in the back of your head. It's telling you need to do something, but you're not 100% sure yet what you want to do with that.
Yeah, I think we find most people in this contemplation stage.
Oh, yes.
Matter of fact, that is truth. Most people are in the contemplation stage, and I can't remember the exact percentages we talked about. Gosh, my teacher would be so upset with me.
I know that you and I, as trainers, when we're training people, we see people standing around and watching us.
Yeah.
And those are people who are in the contemplation stage, people who are thinking about getting some assistance with their fitness, but aren't 100% sure what direction they want to go with that yet. And they see us being good with the people we work with, and they think, well, maybe that's the direction I want to go in.
Absolutely, and that's definitely true. And and again, I can't quantify it in percentages at the moment. So
I don't think that's that important.
No, it's not. It's the premise. I just like to spit facts out.
Yeah, you know. I don't care about facts.
I'm gonna quote that for you. I'm gonna quote that for you, Trump.
Yes, I have to like get some good like little hand things that I'm doing, but you can't see what I'm doing anyway. So. Just imagine that I had some like very small hands that were like making gestures. And facts don't matter. Okay, now back to what we're talking about.
That's perfect. So, following contemplation, where we find the majority, is this preparation phase. Mm-hmm. And this preparation phase is where you're acting now on the idea that you wanted to. So, like, if it's weight loss, you know, you're preparing for weight loss by buying some
extra vegetables.
Extra vegetables, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's your preparation for the task at hand. Or you're going to take away some of the bad food in your house.
You're cleaning out your pantry.
Right. So that's your preparation phase. And I think that, you know, as far as that goes, when it comes down to the stages, you know, of behavior, once you get to this phase, it's important to recognize you've come a long way so far. Like, yeah. You've made the jump, you've committed.
And you have to make that yourself, because fun little cute anecdote. I was a nanny when I was young, and I thought using my knowledge of nutrition and exercise would be helpful in the family. So I cleaned out their pantry, and I put all of the junk food in a little basket and drew a skull and crossbones on it.
Oh, my goodness. What?
I don't think that went over too well. But
I don't think so either.
It has to be something that you do yourself. That being said, it has to be something you do yourself, because if anybody does it for you, you might resent that. It has to be a step you make.
Agreed, 100%. And that's where it comes down to it, is like, ultimately, all of these models, you know, they really mention this aspect of reinforcement and support, and I think that's absolutely necessary, but motivation has to come from within, folks, especially if it's going to be sustainable and long-term. Mm-hmm. Like, you cannot, same reason why, you know, you can't put your happiness and dependent upon other people, is like, if you can't be happy with you, yourself, and I, the royal three, like, there's going to be some issues, you know, like, and that's just an internal thing. And the same thing is said for this aspect of the behavior change and the stage theory approach is where, or the stages of change approach is where it's really a matter of like intrinsic awareness and like committing to that, especially in the preparation phase, is committing to the idea that you're going to be, you know, taking it seriously.
And what comes after that preparation phase?
After the preparation phase is action. So this is where you're actually doing what you set out to do. So if it's weight loss, you're going to start cooking some fresh veggies and stop eating junk food. You're going to, you know, start eating more wholesome stuff. And this is just an example, folks. The action phase just simply means your green lights in the endeavor at hand.
You're starting to take action.
You're starting to take action. It's no longer a plan. It's no longer I'm setting the stages for. You are in it. You are going, and you are green lights.
Yeah, and we can tell when people are in that phase, or if people are still kind of in the contemplation phase, even when they've started training. Because some people just kind of stay in that phase of, like, I'm thinking about doing it, but I'm not completely 100% fully invested in this. So, we just can tell the difference.
Oh, yeah, and it's not, yeah, you certainly can. It's not anything where, I mean, at this point, like, when you're in the action phase, it's kind of, I don't want to say it's hard to regress,
yeah.
But it makes, like, once you get to the action phase, you've made it through the hardest humps, to
I
me,
agree.
My
I
opinion.
Agree.
Like, as someone who kind of practiced this stage approach,
yeah.
Like, that's where you're kind of more comfortable.
Yeah.
And, which leads me to my next point, and this is where people regress. Maintenance phase.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this a problem, Mallory?
Because you think you've attained the goal and now you're already there, you could just do whatever you want, right? That's what people think.
Exactly. So
So
it's this aspect of goal acquisition. It's kind of this, like to me, it's like when people set goals, and even athletes, right? They set goals, like I'm gonna bench press such and such weight. They do all the steps necessary to get there. They hit that 315 bench. What do I do with my life after? You know, it's
It's
kind of
kind of
like
like
that,
that, like
that
that
limbo of, and this
this
is
is where
where ultimately you
ultimately you
guys
guys
like
like
coming
coming
down
down
to
to
the
the
simple
simple
fact
fact
of
of
structuring
structuring
your
your
training
training
and
and
doing
doing
it
it
for
for
more
more
than
than
just
just
numbers,
numbers.
you
Yes, because
know?
I can't tell you how many clients I've had who hit their goal weight and then gain their weight back immediately. Because the goal is not something that's ever completely attainable. As you start to near that goal, you need to push it a little further so that you have something to work towards. Because if you think this is the end of the road, I have gotten to the finish line, I can be whatever I was before now, and it'll be fine. That is not the way it works. You have to constantly keep these practices up. Does it mean you have to not eat carbs or go on the treadmill for 2 hours? No, it means keep eating your vegetables, stay consistent with your strength training, and steady state cardio, and a little high intensity interval training if you can stand it. It means stay consistent with everything you were doing before. Eat the same way you were. I mean, maybe add a cheat day in every now and then, or a cheat meal.
Yeah, cheat days are one of those things that I really got obsessed with when I was
Yeah, they get out of
they
hand.
do very, very quickly. And this is what I'm talking about in this maintenance phase, you guys, is that you know, it's very very easy to let yourself regress back into those stages that you first had started, and it essentially means that you're going backwards. You know, it's
Yes.
once you know
You
how
know how
many
many
people
people
have
have
started
started
a
a
weight
weight
loss
loss
journey
journey
and
and
they
they
have
have
one
one
bad
bad
day
day
and
and
then
then
they
they
don't
don't
jump
jump
on
on
track
track
the
the
next
next
day
day
and
and
wipe their memory of it? They just, I quit.
Or I'll start again on Monday.
Right. And then you're back to square one and it's just
Yeah.
like, oh, come on. It's just
Just realize you had a moment of weakness and keep on
Yeah,
going, you
right. So
know?
this is where maintenance becomes a problem because people think they get comfortable. Like they get comfortable, right? Like they get the goal in hand. They're like, okay, great. I feel empowered. Ego kicks in. Now they're, you know, back at square one because they acquired their goal. They don't know where to go. They're in that limbo and they're back to not having a structured routine again. And the energy has to kind of take a different form, folks. Once you acquire a goal, like you don't stop there. You have to self-recognize and troubleshoot. You're only as strong as your weakest link, and you're only as strong as your weakest characteristic, in my
Yeah,
opinion.
and it's important to know what those weak characteristics are, you know? If you think of fitness or your health as kind of this vain approach, you won't really realize maybe do I have an emotional eating tendency? Do I kind of, what's the word? When
When
you
you
kind
kind
of
of
self-sabotage,
self-sabotage,
that's
that's
what
what
I
I
was
was
trying
trying
to
to
say.
say.
It
I'm
took me
glad
a
you
long
found
time.
it.
You self-sabotage, I mean, do I tell myself I'm doing worse than I am? Do I tell myself I'm not working hard enough? Do I
Like I
kind of
tear
tear
myself
myself
down,
down? That's
that's
another
another
way
way
of
of
sabotaging
sabotaging
your
your
fitness
fitness
and
and
health.
health.
And it's important to know what your weak characteristics are. What are your weak points? How do you work through those things so that you can get to your healthiest and maintain what you've already achieved?
Agreed. Agreed. And you know, people don't stop chasing. That's the problem. They get
Exactly.
content, they get comfortable. Maintenance is work, folks. It doesn't mean you stop.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So,
Are there any more theories?
There's a ton. I'm just going to kind of cruise over the next few.
Yes.
And I think this is a perfect segue, the maintenance portion of what we just talked about. And the next one that follows is relapse prevention. So I want to mention this one briefly. So the premise of this one is to discourage lapses with the individual identifying the high-risk situations and coming up with solutions before they occur. Bingo, preventative approaches, folks. Like, think about it before you fuck up. Differentiating between lapses short-term with this non-adherence and relapses long-term with non-adherence. So improving the overall adherence. So the idea, again, you want to differentiate the short-term between lapses, short-term non-adherence, and relapses, long-term non-adherence. So recognizing what's going to be a kind of a short-term trigger, so to speak, right? So like in your, we just talked about like a completely excavating your, am I saying the right thing? Your kitchen of like foods or something, is that whether it be excavating it or?
I understand what
you're saying. Yeah. Someone out there is going to correct me, so I'm totally cool
That's
with it.
All
right. But yeah, like you're clearing out, you're purging it. You're purging all of your bad foods, right? Like that would be a lapse prevention short term. A lapse prevention long term is saying like, just don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of like alcoholism and stuff, just don't do it.
Or in terms of like dieting and exercise, short term you're going to see that weight start to reappear around your stomach. In the long term, that extra weight is going to affect your joints.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. A good way to put that. There's so many good ones. I'm going to do one more and then save the rest for another time because this could go on for so long. But this one is the social cognitive theory. This is another big one with the theory, behavior change theories. And this one is behavior change and adherence respond to environmental influences. Personal factors and attributes of behavior. High self-efficacy and perceived benefit from making behavior change are critical for adherence. So, this aspect of environmental influences in conjunction with personal factors and the already predisposed attributes of behavior are going to affect the kind of self-efficacy and perceived benefit from making those changes that are critical for adherence. So this just goes into again that kind of perception of your effort.
Yeah, that is kind of like that client I was talking about earlier who would be within the majority, but she is an athlete because of her behaviors and because of her mindset and because of her kind of self-efficacy. I mean, the fact that she is in there 4 days a week besides the days that we're in there together. I mean, that's what makes the difference.
Yeah, and it's this determination factor. Because it really, the key concept is like this reciprocal determinism where it's like the behavior influences and is ultimately influenced by the personal factors and the social environment. So, you know, people are influenced by, you are the company you keep. I'm just going to put it that way. Mm-hmm. Like that's the most simple I can put it. You are the company you keep. So this behavior influence being driven by some personal factors and environmental factors, personal being, don't treat people the way you don't want to be treated. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I look at that. And then in external factors being like, surround yourself with people that you want to, I don't want to say be like, but just good, like good influences.
Yeah.
You know, when your mom and dad tell you that Johnny's probably not the best influence, you should probably listen.
Yeah, of course you don't, but you should.
You should. Uh-huh. Because it really does mold your character and ultimately the perception of, you know, some of the things in front of you. Like, looking back on some people that I got involved with that I shouldn't have, my perception of what was bad at the time was skewed from what I think now as a law-abiding citizen, right? Like, it's just...
Oh, you've just learned. You know, you live, you learn. But going back to the theory, though, I think it kind of goes back to what you surround yourself with in life. If you take yourself out to lunch at McDonald's, instead of going to, like, you could still have a burger somewhere. I mean, preferably a veggie burger, but you could still have a burger somewhere and have it be not so unhealthy. Have lettuce as a bun and have a healthier option than fries. You could still enjoy food without it having to be restrictive. But if you take yourself to, like, a McDonald's or something like that, you're setting yourself up for failure. If you surround yourself with McDonald's-like people who are like, let's go out to eat here, or let's go drink on a Tuesday night or every day of the week, let's, I don't know, all these unhealthy habits that Americans especially have.
Yeah, and really, I mean, that's what it comes down to, is your kind of like social environment, right? Like, it really, the key concept here is talking about this fact of observational learning. So our habits are kind of this perceived observation of the people around us. You know, and I don't want to, like, people make jokes a lot of sheeple, and they say sheeple, and like, reality of it is, like,
We kind of all are to
we
a
kind of
degree.
all are to a degree, right? Especially if you don't have that intrinsic motivation and confidence in an informed decision, such as a fitness journey.
I always use the phrase monkey see, monkey do. Because, I mean, that's kind of what we are, you know? We see something and we emulate that behavior.
Absolutely, especially as the more of an increasing prevalence in these social media influencers, we have this. Trying not to like completely put anyone on blast, but there's a lot of misinformation out there.
Yes, there really is, and I try not to be a jerk and just go around
The
the
Kardashians,
negativity.
I couldn't stop myself. They are killing me. I mean, you've seen all like the fit tees and stuff. Like, that's the type of crap we're dealing with.
In him saying this, what he's really saying is that while the Kardashians look really good and they look like they are models of health in some ways, that is not necessarily the approach that we as fitness and health professionals want to encourage people to take. I don't want you to go out there and try Nutrilife or something like that, or Herbalife too.
Or
There
Herbalife.
are all different ones out there. I don't even know what I'm, because I don't follow these things because I am an autonomous human being and I am going to follow what I know is right. I'm going to eat vegetables and I'm going to eat fruits and I'm going to eat things that came straight from the earth. I'm not going to eat something that came in a packet or something. If I'm on top of the pyramid, I'm making a good amount of money and I have all these minions beneath me that I'm making money off of. That is not the best way to approach fitness. And also, we don't encourage people to technically take the plastic surgery and approach in that way. We try to encourage people to live a healthier lifestyle rather than to just try to take the easy way out.
That's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it. And yeah, thank you for putting that into English for me, because I feel like it was a lot of and ah sounds.
Well, you weren't trying to put down the Kardashians. You were just trying to put down their approach.
Yeah, and I think ultimately that, like, okay, I want to make this clear first and foremost, folks, because I'm a realist. Like, as much as I am a businessman and as much as I love to do what I do, I also want to educate people on what they're being served. Life is marketing in America, and you wonder why there's so many ads thrown in front of you and so many different things. Like, this is all by calculation, folks. This is capitalism at its finest. They are able to sell your information so they can acquire locations to be able to send you marketing in the form of digital media that is pop-ups. So, I mean, I'm probably going to be assassinated by the higher ups of the elite marketing world. But no, I mean, that's the reality of it. So, thinking about your influences, right? Going back to that point in this theory, the outside influences that you expose yourself to, if it's Fit Tea by Kardashian, you know, that's probably not the best model of exemplifying, you know, good health.
Yeah, it's not to say that it's a bad product or that it's something that's bad for you. It's just that's not going to help you attain your fitness goals. Yes, you may lose some water weight. You may have to go to the bathroom a little bit more than usual, but it's not going to help you lose body
To help you
fat.
attain
And it is
goals. Yes,
not
you may lose some
going to
water
help
weight.
you
You
get
may gain
healthier. I mean, detoxes
to
in
go to the
general,
bathroom a little bit more than
the,
usual.
for the most part,
It's not going to
can
help
be
you
good in the
erase
short
body
term,
fat.
but it's not something you
And
want
it
to
is not
practice
good
as a
going to
lifestyle
help
habit.
you get healthier. I mean,
Agreed.
it's not
Agreed.
going to help you
100%.
more than usual. For the most
So, in closing, folks, because we've been at this for quite a while,
This is what
this is what
we
we do.
do.
You know, in closing, general population majority in athlete training, it's really going back to the point, a matter of behavior. And you can be an athlete and not be sport specific. I train athletes all the time that aren't exactly applying that energy into a sport.
Yes,
And I think it's
it's
important
important
to
to
ultimately understand that you can be an athlete if you change your perceptions towards your effort and your behavior.
and that anyone can go from general population or majority to being an athlete, change them. And if they learn to try to set and attain goals.
Agreed. And that's my whole point with the podcast is like with this empowerment factor, like reaffirming that the choice is yours, folks. When you make a commitment to choice and make a commitment to a lifestyle, it's a declaration. It's not a resolution.
No, and you're not diminishing the things you can do your with your life. You're increasing the capacity and volume of your life. You are making your life more full. You're not taking away from what you have currently just by cutting out some junk food or having to spend more time on an elliptical machine or
Agreed, agreed. And you know, I just get so burnt up about this because we live in such a world where people are limiting themselves. And it's like if only they knew the power they had within them. Like it's always a choice, guys. It's always a choice. Like it's always a choice to choose between
what's right and what's
what's right,
easy.
what, yeah, exactly. So, like,
Yes.
I mean, it really just comes down to anything worth having is going to take work.
Yes.
And ultimately, behavior change long term is going to take work. You know, and if you think about this, goes simply much deeper than just fitness. This is about life. And anything worth having, anything worth doing is going to take work and it's going to take m commitment. So when you think about why, you know, maybe your endeavors in your fitness aren't going the best, or maybe your endeavors in your relationship aren't going the best, it's really one and the same where it becomes down to how much work are you putting into it and how committed are you into improving it.
Yes.
So I think a lot of people can benefit not just in their fitness journey, but in their journey of life.
Yeah, in all aspects of
All aspects of life. It really is a holistic approach to be confident in all the endeavors that you put yourself in because it comes down to your perception towards your efforts. You know, at Aspiration Athletics, this all started as an idea as I was washing dishes in a kitchen. You know, how could I provide value to individuals? And it was simply a matter of perception of my efforts and behavior change. I knew that just washing dishes in a kitchen wasn't going to get me to, for one, be a high achieving athlete or to have this high function ability or to have the knowledge at hand to be able to mold my body into whatever shape I want, right? Or to be able to exercise the right to do certain skills and acquire certain skills. It all started with behavior change and it all started with commitment to an idea and having that direction and structured approach towards tackling that goal. And I think if we all could exercise that with all of these different health belief theories that or models of behavior change theories that we've laid out in front of you today. Hopefully this allows you to manipulate and put in perspective your own pursuits and put the ball in your court, so to speak, because it always is. And it's up to you to take a shot. So that's all we have for you today, folks. It has been a absolute blessing, and I'm so humbled to be here to talk with you, with my guest Mallory today. I'm always happy to have her on the show. We have a really good conversation, a great dynamic.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So tune in next time, you guys. We'll be talking about something else pertinent to the fitness industry. But today we talked about general population majority versus athlete training. I'm your host, Evan Burnison. And until next time, folks, aspire to inspire.
Psst. Hey, you. Yeah, you. Still listening? Look, you want in on this? I can help you reach whatever goal you are striving for. So let's work together. Let's cut the crap, let's cut the excuses, and start our journey today. Join me. Join Aspiration Athletics on your fitness journey. Just head on over to aspirationathletics.trainerize.com and sign up for my Aspiration Elite program. You won't regret it. And if you aren't quite ready to take on the intense and profound commitment that is my comprehensive training program, go ahead and start small. We have levels for all sorts of beginners. So please, don't let the scary unknown of the gyms sway you from training. Begin your fitness journey today with me. Now let's go ahead and move forward and never forget, aspire to inspire.